Welcome to Payment Matters. I'm your host, Jeff Lin. Thanks for tuning in today. On this show, we talk about the ever-changing landscape of healthcare payments and the impacts to healthcare payers, providers, and consumers. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at hashtag Payment Matters and follow me at Jeff B. Lin. My guest for today's episode is Matt Rolfs, CEO of MedEvolve, which empowers physician practices to work smarter with data-driven solutions that provide unmatched transparency, automation, and accountability. Matt, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Great, yeah. Always excited to have someone that's really making a big impact on providers out there. Maybe for the benefit of our listeners, you can talk a little bit about MedEvolve and kind of what you guys do and a little bit also about your background as well.
Sure. So just, real quick on me, started off in audit and assurance services with Grant Thornton, working in middle market banking service and software clients, which is kind of where I got my start in software. Got into healthcare IT with Streamline Health out of Atlanta, Georgia in 2009. They're, document management, analytics, coding integrity company, and then came on board with MedEvolve in 2013 as their CFO. In 2017, was promoted to CEO. And have attempted since to then really position our company for a future where data and automation will be the drivers of cost efficiency and quality. We have seen firsthand through our own medical billing business the need for these technologies that drive transparency, accountability, especially for our staff, and it really provides for the automation and distribution of work that drives cash flow for our clients. Internally, we were really struggling with cost containment back in 2017, and we knew we had to leverage automation, AI technologies, drive better decision-making for ourselves and management of our costs. So, we tasked our R&D teams with building out tools that we believed, would drive our future success.
Got it. And in terms of, it sounds like you run your own RCM business, but also sell practice management software to provider practices. So sort of what's your target? Do you have a target segment or a target specialty? Mm-hmm. That you focus on?
Yeah, so we typically target surgical providers. That's kind of where we grew up, in that 1 to 10 doctor space. We have, like I said, our practice management system that's been around since 1998. We've had billing for just about as long, but we really had to kind of pivot the company a little bit because there's some more of these technologies that are available out there that we want to leverage and bring forward to our clients. So we really saw that as our opportunity for growth in the future. As PM systems and medical billing kind of becomes more commoditized, we had to bring some more value to our clients and our prospects. And that's kind of where we see our future headed.
Got it. You talk about this pivot that occurred within your company in 2017. How would you describe what that pivot was and in terms of the company's direction?
Well, we do have a lot of practices that come to us that are struggling just to stay afloat financially. Like I said, we kind of experienced that somewhat for ourselves. Cost of business continues to keep getting higher. For our providers, supply costs, drugs, and namely administrative costs, continue to rise. And in some cases, reimbursements are shrinking. Us as a billing business, we typically price things, on a percentage of collections basis. That was starting to really affect our top line as well. Along with the shift in primary payer, where more money is coming to the consumer, we had to build strategies out that address, that risk that was coming forward in the industry.
What do you think caused sort of the struggle with the practices staying afloat and also even your own RCM businesses? What was sort of the big change that occurred?
Well, it's that the consumer really has more responsibility in payment for healthcare services. And in a lot of instances, practices weren't really prepared for it. So they found themselves behind and continue to have some issues with managing, what seems to be mounting patient balance debt. So they've had to develop strategies to manage patient accounts receivable and work with their patients to make sure, payment is secured, hopefully on the front end, offering, ways to counsel them through the process and kind of give them more transparency into, what the care is going to cost them, up front, as opposed to trying to, collect from them on the back end or, having a tougher conversation, after services have been rendered, which, can lead to as a dissatisfier to a patient for coming back, for a return visit.
And having been in this business for, you joined as a CFO and now you're the CEO, clearly you've been able to see the finances end to end. What's the trending of this? Are you seeing more and more consumer responsibility becoming a bigger part of a provider's revenue?
Absolutely. I won't say I was back in the industry back when this was taking place, but just some of the studies and data that I've seen. Early 2000s, you were looking at 5 to 10% of the money coming to a provider was coming from the patient. Now we see in our client base, on a daily basis, sometimes those are 30 to 40%. So you can imagine, back in those, in the early 2000s, you're just having to manage insurance companies. Well, now you're actually having to deal with real people and their money. So all of which, is putting more pressure on bottom line. Like I said, for a while, you could have grown up in that era of healthcare payments and remain immune for a very, very long time. But as things have changed over the last several years, you're going to have to make changes. And now people are actually seeing the effects of that macro change in their healthcare payments.
Got it. Yeah, and this seems to be a common problem as the the consumer payment responsibility makes a bigger portion of the provider's revenue cycle. Mm-hmm. As you kind of look at this, and I notice you use the word technology pretty often here, which I think is a big part of this. But before technology, and as kind of what were a lot of the practices doing to collect these patient receivables? Were they without Medevolve or before Medevolve? Kind of what were the tactics they were trying to use?
Everything is very reactionary. I guess some of the prospects we have come to us that are having issue, it really starts and ends with bad debt collections, which is a bad way, in this day and age of doing business. It's a necessity, but to the extent that they can have more interaction with their patients rather up front, explain to them what their benefits are, making sure that they have demographics information, insurance information, and authorizations on file, and allow the patient to have more insights into what the cost is going to be on the front end. And instead of having to have them get a surprise bill, not understand what they're paying for, and have to call in dissatisfied, in my opinion, the more practice can get out ahead of that and have that interaction with their patient on the front end, it goes a long way to increasing patient satisfaction across their episode of care.
Got it. Yeah, I heard a couple of phrases that popped out here. You talk about demographic insights and even analytics. I've heard that a couple of times as you're talking about this. And a lot of this requires a lot of data to be had on the consumers. And how does Medevolve kind of take the data and take the analytics to drive meaningful change with consumers?
Well, I think, first of all, having some insights into who is coming through your front office is a big advantage. A lot of times practices don't have access to information about their customer that, if you call it a customer, you can call it, as you would in any industry. Kind of walking in the front door of the business, in terms of the risks of what that consumer brings. So, if you go buy a car, you buy, anything really that's where there's a payment effectively on credit, they're going to have some information about you that allows them to make a decision whether or not they want to provide, goods or services to you. So, one of the things that we're trying to work on here is something we're calling financial clearance workflow. This really can help drive that accountability at the front desk, give them tools to ask the right questions of the patient, identify patients who could be financially at risk because there's something in their profile that could cause a loss of revenue, after the services are provided. So to the extent that we can ask them the right questions, get the best information so that we can file their claims timely and completely, hopefully that provides, some level of satisfaction to them. Also allows for kind of that the closing of the loop of, in terms of finances to happen with, relative ease and reduce the amount of confusion and frustration that patients might see.
And this is the financial clearance workflow? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, love to understand, is this a product that's live in the market already?
It is not. Yeah. So we just released our accounts receivable workflow, which we've seen some great success with. But you know, what our early adopters of some of our workflow solutions have asked for is, you know, how do we really drive accountability, not only in the back office around collections, but how do we, you know, increase the transparency and the accountability to the front desk to make sure that they're getting all the information in a timely manner from the patient to make sure that, you know, claims are filed cleanly and that, you know, there are no surprises for the patient on the back end. So that's something that we're trying to bring forward, you know, with some of the subject matter expertise that we have in-house, you know, having set up offices and you know, billing functions before. How can we take some of that subject matter expertise and codify it and actually turn it into technology that uses AI, you know, in a meaningful way that, you know, can start to make some of those decisions for the person using the tool as opposed to, you know, kind of working off of sticky notes, if you want to kind of put it in a real terms.
And I feel that I call it the sticky note syndrome exists all over healthcare.
Right.
Right. The printed out Excel spreadsheet that's on the wall. What have you learned, especially if, you know, the rollout of the accounts receivable workflow and these other things in your prior projects, sort of, you know, how to really make an impact in healthcare? What's sort of like, is there a secret sauce to doing this?
Well, for us, you know, it was really let me put it in terms of what, you know, we did internally. You know, like I said before, we were in 2017, we were having a really hard time managing costs, and we didn't have a whole lot of insights into what was actually going on in the underlying business, you know, with regards to, you know, what people were doing. So, you know, we really want to understand is, are our people following up on claims that actually have an opportunity to yield a positive outcome? So what I mean by that is, you know, if you file a claim on day one, you know, your response from a payer may not be until day 20. So to the extent that we can separate out those claims that don't need any follow-up today from the work that the collector is getting on their work list on a daily basis, you know, we can actually sometimes separate out 80% of what's on the accounts receivable ledger and not even have to look at that until the time is right. So that remaining 20 is what remains to be able to actually be followed up on, you know, has an ability to, you know, touch the claim, work the claim, and allow for a financial outcome. And when we did that, when we stratified that AR and we focused on what we could affect today as opposed to stuff we can't affect, you know, the amount of work that we actually had in our business office was way less, up to, you know, 20 or 30% of the work that we were doing, you know, sometimes had no chance of having an effect on an outcome. So trying to use some science and some, you know, analysis about what was actually going on here and trying to apply that to this technology. And, you know, in our clients that have installed this, you have seen a lot of the same results, you know, in terms of, you know, thinking that you had to hire more people or, you know, am I overstaffed? You know, a lot of times we can actually prove that out, you know, using the software, and then they can build the right amount of FTE expense around that process so that they're not overspending.
Got it. That's pretty impactful. It's funny to see the 80-20 rule get applied everywhere, especially and really reducing and focusing the team on that. If you're tuning in, you're listening to Payment Matters. I'm joined by Matt Rolfs, CEO of MedEvolve, having a great discussion on kind of the change in provider practices and things that are being done to really impact and enhance the experience there. In terms of your client base, are you nationally? Where's the focus on your client base today with MedEvolve?
We're across the U.S. You know, our primary specialties that we have in our client base, you know, orthopedics, urology, ophthalmology, you know, derm, pathology, gastroenterology, you know, those are some of the bigger ones that we typically deal with on a daily basis.
Got it. And so you're clearly dealing with geographic differences, mm-hmm. and specialty differences. And I'd love to understand, and I think, you know, I'm based out of our Southern California office, and Southern California is not representative of the entire U.S., clearly not. But we'd love to understand if do you see differences in the patient mix or the profiles that come into your clients across the country? And if so, are you guys doing anything special to address the unique demands of those patients?
I don't know if there's anything necessarily geographical about it, but you know, I don't know, you know, from MedEvolve's perspective, and I'm sure just, you know, anybody that's has employer-based insurance, you know, across the country, is, you know, we see our deductibles go up. We see our co-payments and you know, our premiums increasing every year. And, you know, going back to the deductible side is, you know, we've seen a lot of we've seen that affect a lot of our providers across the country, especially earlier in the year. So, you know, that first part of the year when your deductible resets, you know, you're coming out of pocket for the first part of the year for any of your medical care, you know, and I think it just at MedEvolve alone, you know, I think we had about 20% increase in people that went from a PPO plan to a high deductible plan. And if, you know, if I could take a liberty of extrapolating that across the country, you can imagine the shift in terms of who the payer was to the provider early in the year. A lot of times that is the patient. And depending on your means, somebody having to have a surgery that, you know, costs several thousand dollars out of pocket, you know, may have a high deductible plan that has a $10,000 deductible, you know, you're going to have a hard time, you know, paying for that service. To the extent that our providers and healthcare organizations can work with patients to allow them to understand, number one, what they're going to be paying for. So if they can estimate their surgeries or their procedures and let them know ahead of time, here's what you're going to owe. And then also give them opportunities to pay in different ways. So InstaMed, who we work with pretty closely, you know, they have things like card on file. You can work with financing companies to help you finance your surgery if it's important, you know, that you get it done right away. You know, and then just, you know, practice can elect to work with patients on payment plans. So, you know, just giving them different avenues to get the services they need at the right time, you know, can really go a long way in terms of, you know, managing your patients and how they consume healthcare and pay for healthcare, which I think is the biggest change, you know, in my mind, I guess, nationwide.
Yeah. Sounds like that's a big change, I think. And we hear a lot about the patient experience and what that means. And it means different things to different people. You know, what's your sense here as you look at your clients that are out there that are, you know, tackling these issues? And there's, you know, you go to these large conferences, there's probably 1,000 apps at the end of the day that you could acquire or purchase or do different things here. But you know, how do you distill the noise? There's probably a lot of things that could waste the providers, you know, redirect them into the wrong area. But, you know, what do you see as you look out there for your existing clients, kind of things where they should be adopting or focusing their time on? If you were to, you know, they're able to talk to a prospective client, what would you tell them?
You know, I think really focusing on your administrative costs in your organization and you know, driving solutions, you know, to the organization that can help reduce those or make, you know, your cost to collect as little as possible. You know, MedEvolve itself, you know, can't help with drug costs or device costs, you know, all those things that, you know, we can't really affect. But, you know, to the extent that you can have technologies that you can, you know, use to avoid denials on the front end of the revenue cycle. You know, like I said, one of the key areas we see problems is, you know, is on the financial clearance and you know, patient pre-services. You know, so many of these denials we see from the insurance companies come from something that could have otherwise been prevented, you know, at the front desk by asking the patient the right set of questions or, you know, engaging with them earlier in the process, not just when they show up and they have to get seen. You know, something as simple as getting the demographic and insurance data correct can be really hard to police. You know, there's a lot of patients coming in and out of the waiting room. People are, you know, doctors just want to get the patients through, get them, you know, get on to the next patient because they have a full schedule, you know, but you got to make sure that you're getting, you know, all that information correct on the front end, because it can really cause some downstream issues and put your payments at risk if you're not managing that process well. For us, you know, figure out ways to, you know, it's the garbage in, garbage out, you know, that old saying.
Right.
To the extent that we can get good information on the patient on the front end, understand what they're, you know, fully, you know, what their situation is financially, and communicate well with them and help them through the process. You know, I think that is really where, from a patient standpoint, you know, where practice can really, you know, employ technologies and where they can, you know, if they want to spend their dollar on technology, you know, that's a good place to do it.
As you alluded to earlier, which is some of the practices that you're supporting had a 5 to 10% of their receivables was from the patient, and seeing that shift to 30 to 40%. Forgot to mention, probably within this framework here, that 30 to 40%, they're not collecting all of it, right?
No. I mean, if you nationally, and I was trying to look at some of the stats here before the call, but, the balances over $200, only about 66% of those are collected in the first year. So just on, if you can extrapolate out over the population, you have 33% of your money, that's just going to be, the minute 2 feet step out the door, you're never going to see it, unfortunately.
Wow. And really excited about this financial clearance workflow that you'll be launching. How do you see, or do you have any expectation for what change could be brought on with clients, or just kind of I know it's still not launched yet, but I'd love to understand sort of any expectations there.
Yeah, well, one of the concepts is to mine as much data as we can about the history of that patient and bring that forward to the front desk person so they can understand if there is any risk for that particular patient. So let's just say that Matt Rolfes, moves a lot, changes jobs quite a bit. It takes 5 statements for Matt to have a response to a payment. If we can build a profile of that person and score them as they're coming through, like I said, we want to focus on the 80%, or sorry, on the 20%, excuse me, that may have an issue versus the 80% that won't. But we may give Matt Rolfes some more scrutiny as he comes through the door, ask him more questions, make sure, the insurance is correct, the insurance is in the right order, and we collect a payment from him on the way in, or even before the time of service. Whereas Jeff may be somebody that has the same job for the last, 10 years, has never moved, has basically had the same insurance, all those things that are consistent about Jeff. Always pays within one statement. That person may have less scrutiny, and we spend less time and effort, checking him in. So, I say that to say, again, it goes back to the 80-20 rule, is we spend a lot of time on the 20% that have a risk and less time on the 80% that maybe don't.
Got it. Yeah, it makes sense there. I'm applying the same lessons learned you had from the account receivables workflow. Let me ask, do you have hope for healthcare in terms of resolving the ills that impact every constituent out there?
just from a personal story, I just recently had my daughter go through, an episode of care and, went through the financial clearance process at a hospital. And, it was kind of shocking to me that, I kind of had offered to, put a card on file and say, hey, bill me and then make sure I get the receipt, the EOB, whatever it is, so I understand what I'm paying for. But I think more and more we're going to see it become just like we do in a consumer train, normal retail transaction. To the extent that we can give people access to pay online, like I said, to put a credit card on file, to track their statements and things like that by email or text message. I think all those things will reduce the amount of, I say, people costs that we have to have. I think one of the big things, in terms of the next 10 years in terms of healthcare, and I think some of the studies would support this, is that, 30% of the back office jobs in the US, could be automated by the year 2030. So that's your accountants, your payroll, your data entry folks, all the people that you wouldn't necessarily see in a back office of a healthcare organization. But, computers only have so much capacity to replace, human empathy, although they are trying, right? And barring any large scale change in how healthcare is paid for in the next 10 years, those tough and personal financial conversations are going to continue to happen with patients, for the foreseeable future. So if we're able to automate things and move payroll dollars, out of the back office, I hope there would be some, of that dollar that is shifted towards working with patients, at a personal level, to make sure they understand, what their care will cost and what, if any, portion, they can expect to be responsible for. I think if you can have that personalized conversation around responsibility with the patient, what their benefits are or aren't, I think you can have, or you can allow for a better experience and hopefully less stress and surprises for them, subsequent to their episode of care.
Yeah, that's great. So I think, you know, it's forgetting that there's the word care in healthcare. and I think that gets forgotten quite a bit here. Matt, this is a great and interesting insights here. I wanted to give you a minute or so if there's anything you want to mention to the audience in terms of things we weren't able to cover today about you or your company.
You know, there's a lot of great opportunities in healthcare, you know, for us to affect change. You know, I mean, you hear about it in the political debates and things like that in the news. And, you know, I think the administrative costs around healthcare kind of, you know, get lost in the shuffle of drug companies and those types of things. But we really do spend a lot of time and money in this country around, you know, administering, you know, the back end part of healthcare. You know, so to the extent that we can create technologies that make that easier, more seamless. You know, I think then we at MedEvolve or, you know, any other company really are contributing to you know, making healthcare less costly for you know, United States. And, you know, hopefully we're building in some you know, good tools that patients utilize and make their lives easier and be able to be better consumers of healthcare.
Got it. Thanks, Matt. And this is great. And for the audience here, these are the key payment matters we're tackling today. Thank you to my guest, Matt, for joining me today. Matt, if our listeners want to learn more about MedEvolve or yourself, how would they go about finding you?
www.medevolve.com.
Well, thank you once again, Matt, and thank you to all of you for listening in. Remember that you can listen in to these episode weekdays at 4:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 8:30 p.m. Eastern. You can also listen on Apple Podcasts and Google Play Music, or just say, Alexa, play Healthcare Now Radio. If you have a comment about the episode of the show, follow hashtag Payment Matters or connect with me on Twitter at Jeff B. Lynn. You can learn more about my show at healthcarenowradio.com or at instamed.com. Until next time, I'm Jeff Lynn. Thanks.